Hello and welcome to the DCI Judge Summaries for January 2012. Coming to you from a very, very cold Isle of Wight. It's snowing outside at the moment. I hope not too much of it settles. I would actually like to go to work, surprisingly, on Monday. Also, apologies, I'm not feeling my best at the moment. If a few coughs slip into the podcast, then I'm sorry for those. Let's get on with the content, the DCI Judge Summary for January 2012. Looking at documents and web contents, importantly, we have a new IPG, a new infraction procedure guide, we have new Magic tournament rules, and we have a new comprehensive rule. So three of the most important documents in the game, and they've all been updated. Go to Google for DCI Document Center. It's the easiest way for you to find links to those. It's the IPG, the MTR, and the CR. Check your dates. The documents open with a line that tells you when they were last updated, and make sure you're on the most up-to-date version. Importantly, the IPG updates do not contain any changes to do with optional missed triggers that you may have heard of. Forget those, pretend they didn't happen. That's what we're doing. There is a small tweak to miss trigger rules right now. There is almost certainly going to be a bigger change coming in a future update. But for now, if you are holding a competitive rules enforcement level event and you need the latest IPG, I do suggest you read it to make sure you know for sure what's actually in it before you start judging. International Magic Judges website. This continues to become the website to go now that DCI Family is not officially supported. For the whole of 2012, a new section is going to be added and filled with content each month on the IMJ website. In this order, we're going for communication in January. The homepage is going to get sorted out, links going to get sorted out. That should be done by now. Remember, this is International Magic Judges. I strongly urge you visit that site and go have a look. In February, we'll be adding Pro Tour and Grand Prix staff list with photos. In March, under the Rules Education banner, we'll be doing a Card of the Month thing on there. Mailing list summaries will be moving on there in April. Judge Anniversaries, Judge of the Week, that'll be happening in there. That'll be all moved across in May. Knowledge Pool in June. Announcements and channels of communication in July, travel guides in August. These are awesome, by the way. Big shout out to the people. I don't know anyone's name who's been involved in the travel guides, but these are awesome documents. If you're, let's say, later this year, I'm going to be attending Grand Prix Madrid. I'm going to be attending the Grand Prix in Turin. I can look at these travel guides and I can know, right, that brilliant. Well, I can get to Madrid this way. This is what I should do while I'm there. Very, very useful things to print out, take with you, have on your smartphone, whatever, how you ordinarily manage your information. In September, under the education banner, gatherer rules changes, card errata's translations, they're all going to be moved across to IMJ. In October, we're going for event reports. In November, personal pages and interviews. And in December, there'll be a big wiki push. The wiki is already on International Magic Judges. I'll be telling you about an article on there later. But the big push, December of this year, will be to get that wiki going. But the big push for January was getting the homepage sorted out with links to all the significant websites that have any kind of Magic the Gathering judging information on them. Big thanks go to Giuseppe Tufo, Thomas Marchiori, Marco Storelli, and Simona Zanella that have all been involved in the IMJ project so far. Have a look there. If there's a good website that you go to for your Magic the Gathering content that's not linked from there, then let us know about it. That'd be awesome. Charlotte Sable was very pleased to announce that the rules.wizards.com rulebook is once again up to date. I have to admit, I don't think I'd ever heard of it. I didn't realise there was a comprehensive rulebook on rules.wizards.com, but it is really good. Firstly, it's linked to the Judge Centre, so if you go to the Judge Centre, you take an exam there. When you answer a question, the answer to the question will be explained to you afterwards, and it's explained to you in terms of the comprehensive rules. But that's not much use unless you can actually link to the comprehensive rules to go, no, really, it's here, I can point to it, it's this is the rule, so you can see the whole thing. Charlotte Sable apparently has led, after much weeping and gnashing of teeth, a huge update to get the comprehensive rules on that website back up in line with the real CR, which, given they've just been updated, is no mean feat at all. If you do find any errors in that version of the rulebook, then let Charlotte know. She says she can be reached by email or through the Judge Centre. Christian Gurilovich is carrying out some votes to find out what you think the Judge Article of the Year from 2011 should be. The first and second votes are underway. First vote was about working and running a tournament. This vote ends on February the 5th, which is the day after I'm recording this podcast. It's probably going to be too late to you. I won't spend too much time on that one. Large number of nominated articles. Very well done to whoever manages to win that category. The second vote on the rules and regulations, voting is possible on this one until the end of February the 12th, so you've got another week on this one. The articles up are Do You Really Know How to Cast Spells by Justin Turner, there's a two-headed giant FAQ from Fabian Peck, A Different Perspective, Your Mileage May Vary by Jason Wong, An Explanation of the Mistrigger Policy Changes, or How Magic is Dying, Part 783, by Jason Wong. It's kind of an interesting article because it explains mistrigger policy changes that aren't actually in effect. But hey, kudos to him for writing the article so quickly. And also Identifying Moving Violations by David Hibbs. They're all good articles. They're all worthy nominations. The vote for those, I realise how difficult it is to give out links on a podcast, but I'm going to try and do this one because I think this one's important. So The vote is happening on a website called SurveyMonkey. The article, the URL is www.surveymonkey.com/s/GQRRVNP. Well, for those of you who like your phonetic alphabet, Golf Quebec Romeo, Romeo Victor November Papa. Okay, good. Go there, vote for your favourite article, and that will be fantastic. But there's even more articles for you to go and read. There was a judge report by our own, our favourite tech, Riccardo Tessitore. It's called Garrick Relentless and GP Hogwarts, and that's on blackborder.com. We also have a Midwest Judge Conference report by James Elliott. That's only available as a Google Doc. I think to find the link for that, you're going to need to check out the DCI Judge L archives yourself for that one. Also, there's a wiki page on International Magic Judges by Martin Gull called Result Entry Slips, Penalties, and You. And as it is a wiki page, you're invited to collaborate and improve on the article. Martin's given you a very good start. He's a very well-known, very good scorekeeper. And you're invited to collaborate, improve this article, and lend your knowledge to the rest of the judge community. Awesome thing, Wiki. Really looking forward to seeing the push towards the end of this year to get the Wiki really well utilised. A Dark Ascension FAQ has been released. Scott Marshall reminded us about that. Again, you can probably find that in the DCI Document Centre. There's a plea also from Michael Weiser, who I believe is or was the RC for Germany anyway, and he's looking for content for the judge booth. And I'll read out his guidelines for you. He wants you to use simple cards when possible. Cards that are in standard work best. Better is using only cards from Innistrad, obviously Dark Ascension, and M12. The question should both test what the candidates, contestants, what do you call them? People who come to the judge booth. I'm going to say contestants, that sounds fun. It should test the contestants and also educate them. So just taking part in the quiz should leave them walking away with a bit of extra knowledge, perhaps. They should involve core rules, so by that we mean basics about layers, about targeting, about casting spells, about combat, and about turn structure. That's quite a lot of basics to cover, but you really don't need to go far out of those categories to come up with some good, interesting questions. No more than four cards, please, as well. We want to keep the questions relatively simple, not too hard to understand what's going on. After all, we're not trying to test someone's comprehension of a complex game state. If anything, that's what the game is about. If we were good at that, we'd be playing and winning the Pro Tour and thousands of dollars or something. No, what we want is relatively simple game states, but they require complex rules knowledge of those basics, interactions of the basic rules. That's what we're going for. And finally, about the answer, we don't want yes and no answers because we don't want the players to be able to simply guess the answer. That won't solve our goal of educating the contestants. We'd like more involved answers than that, if possible. There's a Google Doc sheet for you to submit questions to, and there's also a link in the summaries for with more information about the judge booth, so you know kind of what to aim for. Very cool project. It'd be awesome to have loads of you involved in that. Okay, so that's your fill of documents for the month. Let's move on to some community announcements. Stephen Briggs would love you to make a New Year's resolution. I'll read this verbatim. I encourage you this next year to take one day, just one day, and host a charity event at your local store or gaming community. If you want to know more about how to organise and run such an event, and what drives me each year to run one, please read my article, which is on Star City Games, and I also invite you to watch my three-part video series, which is on YouTube. That's Stephen Briggs saying that. I haven't run a charity event myself. More shame to me. Perhaps I shall get one done this year and live up to that honour, Stephen. For advice and different styles, perhaps, on promoting or running a successful charity event, you can get in touch with any of Regina Cross, Lloyd Dobson, or Carsten Heiser. These judges have all been doing this for years, apparently, and they're absolutely fantastic people. Again, I don't think I've actually met any of them myself, but Stephen Briggs has, and he's awesome, so if he says that these guys are awesome, then, well, they're awesome. Johanna Vertinen continues her job of wishing a happy anniversary list of judge birthdays for January. Go and look at the text version of this summary to find out more. The featured veteran of the month is Raymond Fong. He's one of our own in the UK here. And he was the person who first certified me as a judge. I made my level one test back at the Cold Snap pre-release, and he tested me there. I literally would not be here without him. So, yeah, go check him out. There's also only one Level 3 judge anniversary this month, but it's a relatively important one. Check out the article for details on Toby Elliott, everyone's favourite L5. God, I'm going to get fired for saying something like that. And Carlos Ho has an announcement about judge advancements. We'd like, obviously, to welcome the most recent additions to our ever-growing family. I'm not going to read out the names because in December 2011, we had 81 new judges and 19 new level 2s. The expansion that the judge program is seeing is quite phenomenal. You guys are doing an amazing job of getting people through the ranks. But Brian Schenk would like it to be a little bit better. We have some recommendations for L1 candidates. Brian Schenk has looked at data from the L1 tests that are being created, looking at the answers that have been submitted, and basically he knows, he can see what's going wrong generally across the whole pool of L1 candidates, and here's recommendations from him. If you're an L1 candidate, these are things you should do. You should keep in mind as you're preparing for the test. Please review how combat damage works and how the steps in the combat phase work. The knowledge pool on the DCR Judge L discusses a number of scenarios and how to handle errors that come up, but a general reminder about how serious problems get handled at events is good. For L1s, you're not expected to know the IPG. What the document you need to read is the JAR, the Judging at Regular document. Similar to the first point, you need to know how combat works in Two-Headed Giant. Please take the opportunity to look at the Two-Headed Giant FAQ. I told you earlier that Fabian Peck has given us a new one to look at. Please do. It's an awesome document. A lot of knowledge in a small space. Get it into your brain. When triggered abilities are put onto the stack, they're put onto the stack in AppNap order. Active player first, non-active player next. And you have to choose a target for the ability at that time when they go on the stack. They also go onto the stack automatically, regardless of whether you intend to use the ability or not. In other words, if it's a May ability, it still targets, goes on the stack, and only at resolution do you decide whether you're actually going to make use of the ability. Okay. And a fifth point, mana abilities don't use the stack. You cannot respond to them at all. Get those five things sorted out, you'll be doing well towards the level one. And those tips courtesy of Brian Schenk. Do keep in mind that easy practice exams are geared especially to help people prepare for the L1 exam itself with comparable content to the L1 exam. And finally, if you are considering level 2, make use of the level 2 practice exam as a resource. These are excellent, excellent resources. There's a strong correlation between people who take and do well at the practice exam will do well at the real exam. It's a no-brainer. Why would you not use these resources? Lastly, there's a couple of judge center issues that we need to remind you about. If you have passed the Rules Advisor test, you have to submit feedback on the test in order to have your membership updated. We need someone else to do that for you. Otherwise, we won't be able to pick up that you passed the Rules Advisor test and actually mark it on your profile. It's down to a date bug. The year is kind of capped in Judge Center at 2010. I don't know the technical reasons for it, but the Judge Center still thinks it's 2010, even though we're in 2012. Thankfully, the Judge Program knows full well it's in 2012 and is looking forwards to the future. The Judge Center itself, still having a problem. So, Rules Advisor test. Submit feedback to say, hey, update my membership, please, and it will happen. New judge levels, so if you go through level 1, level 2, and you pass it, it should be updated within a week after the test feedback has been submitted. Please tell your candidates that it will take a week for that to happen, so that they don't worry about it. And reviews or DQ reports, they're still being processed correctly because they do have a creation date, which thankfully can go past 2010, even though you can't input that in the field at the time. Okay, community done. Let's move on to policy and tournament operations. So, as I've said before, there's an official January the 1st IPG release where triggered abilities are treated the same as before, but other minor fixes that you've been told about are now in force. Most notable is a change to slow play. I'll try to summarise this. In short, you can only loop a number of times. You can't loop to the outcome you want, unless you can tell me how many times you need to loop to get there. There we go. That's all I'm going to say. If you want to know more, take a good look at the DCI Judge L list. There's been quite a lot of questions on there. But remember that. Loop a number of times, not to a game state. Keep to that, you'll be fine. Eric Shukan has replaced Kevin Desprez as the leader of the Investigations Committee, and as one of his first steps in that new role, he's offering an insight about the process the committee follows to analyse reports. If you want to know more, go and have a look at the post on DCI Judge L. One interesting piece of policy centres around a card in Dark Ascension called Graph Digger's Cage. Arthur Halavate raises the very interesting question, how exactly do you deal with a player who cracks a fetch land, goes and finds Dryad Arbor, and goes to put that on the battlefield? So Dryad Arbor is it's one of those funky cards from Future Sight. There's both a land and a creature, so a fetch land can go and find it. But if a Graph Digger's Cage is out in the open, then creature cards can't come into play from the library. So at what point do you hold them to the decision they've made? Is it legal to crack a fetch land, find a Dryad Arbor, and then have it fail to come into the battlefield? Or what? sorry, there's one of those coughs I said was going to get in there. So it is legal to choose a Dryad Arbor, but whether we hold them to it is very much dependent on rules enforcement level. At regular, definitely allow a player to make a different choice in order to accomplish a legal outcome and educate them to what would happen at a higher rel. Well, at a higher rel, what would you do? Think about that. Think about that one for yourself. I think that's it's a good mental exercise to go through. So put yourself in the position of that player. You crack a fetch land, you go and find a Dryad Arbor, you go to put it into play. At what point have they just committed themselves to cracking a fetch land for no reason? Denis Filaratov has just come across the idea of double sleeving cards and wondered if it was allowed. If you've not seen this practice before, it's where you take a card and you put a small sleeve on it that snugly fits the card. I believe they're called perfect fit sleeves. You sleeve the card in that, and then you sleeve it, the whole thing, again, in another sleeve that'll obviously be slightly bigger than the first one. Is this allowed? Yeah, sure, as long as there's no easily detectable differences that lead to marked cards. I mean, double sleeving is exactly the same. It comes with the same caveats as sleeving. If you sleeve a deck, can it be marked? Yes. If you don't sleeve a deck, can it be marked? Yes. If you double sleeve a deck, can it be marked? Yes. What's wrong is marked cards. What's not wrong is any kind of sleeving that goes in with that. On the subject of marked cards, Andrew Alchemist brought a very, very interesting situation to the list. He said there was a case of an undetectably marked card. And you might wonder, if it's undetectable, then how on earth is it marked? Well, the judge was wearing a strange kind of polarized sunglasses and noticed that two sleeves in the player's deck were completely different through his polarized sunglasses. Only when he took the sunglasses off, lo and behold, the sleeves looked identical. Very, very strange situation to be in. So are the cards marked? Well, I would say no. There's no official answer on this. But if the player has got marked cards, but in such a way that they have literally no idea that they're marked, well, how are they marked? Leave that to your interpretation. Gilbert Hedegaard brought us a situation where a first-time player in an FNM, they have a flash freeze in their sideboard, but they've gone to a match and they're playing the flash freeze main deck in game one. And when they're investigated, it's found that, well, they added the card because they knew what the opponent was playing and flash freeze was going to be good in this matchup. So, of course, they sideboarded it in for game one. The idea being that it's a local standard Friday Night Magic and perhaps this player's first actual tournament. Is it acceptable to disqualify somebody from a regular rules enforcement level tournament as the first interaction they've ever had with a judge? Yeah, sure it is. You can DQ people for the first thing that they do wrong at their first tournament. I don't think they're going to go away with a sour taste in their mouth from that if you handle it correctly. Okay? I'll read out part of a quote from James on this. I'd ask some questions and try to determine his understanding, but the burden is on that player to convince me that I shouldn't disqualify him. If you're concerned about the disqualification, don't forget why we do this. Yes, we want to educate the players in question. Yes, we want to educate everyone else in the room, everyone who hears about this situation, and we need to protect the other players in the event, the ones that aren't breaking the rules. The judging at regular document, it does leave a lot of room for fixing in-game errors. But if a player knowingly does the wrong thing, then they need our special attention. And if that means a DQ, then that means a DQ. Chances are they'll be back next week. They won't break that rule. Life will be fun. Dan Lynch brought up a possible conflict between sections 4.4 and 8.4 of the MTR, and I won't lie, I'm going to have to look that up in order to comment on it. So having just looked that up, one says that in a team or two-headed giant event, if you leave the play area, then you can't come back to the match. And the other says, if you had an opportunity to gain hidden information, for example, talking to a spectator, then you can't come back to the match. Now, obviously, this is aimed at team events where three players on a team are playing individual duels. They may well finish their individual duel, having beaten their opponent, and then leave the play area. Now, ordinarily, they'd be allowed to continue talking with their teammates who are in other duels and advise them on what to play, so long as they're not breaking slow play rules. But this just says if they leave the play area, they're not coming back. Obviously, this doesn't apply in quite the same way to two-headed giant. You need people to be able to leave the play area and come back because, well, that's tantamount to a concession if you leave the play area. So can someone on a two-headed giant team go off to the loo and come back and carry on playing? Then yes, of course they can. We had two requests for a policy clarification, as it were, from Petr Hudacek. First of all, hidden information violation. Hidden information violations only occur if you intentionally and illegally seek information that you didn't previously know. So it has to be information that was hidden from you, you never knew it, and now you do because you did something illegal. As an example of something that is not a hidden information violation, if you draft a card, you put it face down into your pile, which you're now not supposed to look at, but then you peek at it later, which you're not allowed to do, you haven't committed a hidden information violation, because whilst that the identity of that card is supposed to be hidden from you at that point, it was known to you. So it's not a hidden information violation. And in fact, this is a non-specific infraction. We don't have a particular infraction to cover this anymore. I'll move on to the next one. Players handling infractions without involving a judge. this happens sometimes, if you notice a player that's handling an infraction by themselves, not involving a judge, this itself is not an infraction, because the tournament errors that we recognise are only those that are listed in the IPG, so tournament error, slow play, etc. For a generic violation of the MTR, of which this is an example, and which the previous example about peeking at a card that you already knew the identity of, which is not hidden information violation, they're generic violations of the Magic tournament rules, you simply ask the players to avoid such behaviour. They don't receive a warning as such. There's nothing to record for this, but if they disregard your verbal chat that told them to avoid such behaviour, then they would be committing unsporting conduct major, one example of which is not following the direct instruction of a tournament official. So this is how we generally handle non-specific MTR violations. You do something you're not allowed to do, we tell you, you're not allowed to do that. You do it again, then we told you you weren't allowed to do this, you did it anyway, that's unsporting conduct, we're going to penalise you for that. Finally, there was two knowledge pool scenarios. I'm going to click them up to have a look at these. There was a 38-card deck list and a lightning bolt one. These are both bronze-level discussion things. That means they're aimed at L1s. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to present the scenario to you so you have a chance to think about it. I'm not going to give you the results or the end of the discussion here. If you want that, you can go and look on the DCI judge list yourself. So during deck list counts, the Grand Prix trial, 32 players, it's sealed format. One player has turned in a deck list that has 38 cards on it. There are no white cards listed, and there are no white mana activations or flak bash costs either, but the deck list does have three planes. And there are several strong white cards in the sideboard. At the start of round two, when you deck check the player, the deck has 40 cards in it, which includes the three planes he listed, and also two Abyssinian priests that they're listed as present in the card pool, but they were not listed as being played. There's no other issues in the deck. How are you going to proceed with that? For reference, Abyssinian Priest is a white card. So this player did not claim to be playing any white cards. For some reason, he did have three planes in his deck. Go figure that one out. Another example for you to have a ponder about. This is a standard Friday Night Magic, and a player cast a Lightning Bolt. I'll let that one sink in. Lightning Bolt, that's not legal in Standard. So his opponent calls a judge immediately and says, hey, why is my opponent playing an illegal card? And after some questioning, the judge determines that this player had absolutely no idea what it even meant to be playing Standard. What is Standard? I just brought some cards with me from home, and Lightning Bolt looked pretty good, so I thought I'd play that one. Is that a problem, judge? What do you tell me? Is that a problem? Have a think about that. How would you deal with it? How would you deal with both players in that match? How would you keep your tournament running whilst you're resolving this? And how would you ultimately get on to the next round? So yeah, have fun with those discussion ones. I'm really enjoying the Knowledge Pool series, by the way. David Zimet was responsible for the 38-card decklist one, and Dan Stevens brought us the Lightning Bolt one. Excellent work, guys. Really loving it. Loving it. Finally, some events that are coming up. GP Austin 2012 was on January the 7th and 8th, that's done. Head judge was Jason LeMahieu, and from all accounts that one went really well. GP Orlando is in the books, that was on January the 14th and 15th. That was head judged by Riccardo Tessitore. He says it was a great weekend, and it was snowing in some areas of the States, but they were enjoying their time at Universal Studios with just a t-shirt. Nice. Again, I believe that's the one that had the full head judge report on blackwater.com. So go and check that one out. Ricardo's event reports are always a fantastic read. Absolutely love them. I'm going to give a shout out to Eric Dickerman and David de la Iglesia, who were noted Globetrotters heading off to GP Austin from Costa Rica and Spain, respectively. Those two and Hector Fuentes were also found in Orlando, so real Globetrotters, real commitment there, guys. Well done. In February, we have It says here Pro Tour Honolulu 2012. Of course, we all know it as Pro Tour Dark Ascension. We've got a bit of a naming change with the Pro Tours, not naming them for the place that they're going to, but the set that's legal at the time. It's going to be quite exciting. It's one of the new Pro Tours. I'm really, really interested to see how this goes. Toby Elliott's going to be judging it. It's the first of the closed era of Pro Tours. No side events. Apparently, there's going to be increased coverage. Really looking forward to it. If you're going to be involved in that, have some fun out there. It looks like it's going to be a fantastic event. We've also got a Grand Prix in Kobe. That's on February the 18th and 19th. We've got one in Lincoln on the same weekend. So it's James McKay in Kobe and Scott McCarshall, what am I doing today? Sorry, Scott, I love you, really. Scott Marshall will be head judge of GP Lincoln on February the 18th and 19th. David Delalleyes is going to there as well. Is there a GP he's not going to be at? Unbelievable. Keep it up, David. Keep it up. Love it. There's also Grand Prix Madrid at the end of February. It's on 25th and 26th. Head judges there will be Kevin Desprez and Ricardo Tessitore, with Alfonso Bueno as their regional coordinator. There's a bunch of guys heading over from the USA. We've got Ricky Hayashi is going to be there, Brian Prillerman, Tony Mayer from Costa Rica, Eric Dickerman again, and Alejandro Raggio from Argentina. Alejandro! Oh yeah, love it. Going to be a great crowd. I'm going to be there myself. I'm really looking forward to that tournament. Should be fantastic. Also on the same weekend is a Grand Prix in Baltimore. That's being head judged by Christiana. That's quite amusing. Am I reading that right? Seriously. Ricardo is head judging in Madrid at the same time as Christiana is head judging in America, in Baltimore. That's quite amusing. Regional coordinator there is Jared Silva. Good luck with that one. That's all the events I've got on my list coming up, and that's it for another round of the DCI summaries. So, everything that happened on the DCI judge list for January, you should know about it now. Tune in next month to find out what happened in February. It's been a pleasure recording this. I hope you've enjoyed it. Speak to you soon.